Hi, my name is Eniola Hu.
And I'm Tayo Biro, and you're listening to To Be Continued, a podcast where Nollywood meets real life.
What's going on, Tayo?
Another week. I'm actually good. I'm packing. Oh yeah, like I told you, I'm moving this week.
Nice.
A lot of stuff going on. I'm just like packing and trying to get my shit together. But other than that, I've been good. What about you?
I've been great too. Like I took the week off, so I'm here. Yeah. I'm almost dreading going back to work, but because Wednesday is a holiday, it's going to break the work week up for me. So I'm just like, this is the perfect, I couldn't have taken my break at a more perfect time. So I like that.
That's good.
Yeah. So today I have some thoughts from one of our listeners, or like a letter from one of our listeners. Her name is Ekene. Mm-hmm. And she sent me some comments regarding the Living in Bondage episode. So she said, hi, Eniola and Tayo, just listened to your podcast on Living in Bondage, still my best Nollywood movie till date. I really enjoyed your review, especially when you described the detective. It was hilarious. But I have a few additions, especially regarding Igbo excellence. So she's Igbo as well. So, She said, Igbos are some of the proudest Nigerians I know. They're proud of their culture, show it everywhere. She said their culture means everything to them. They're not ashamed of it. And they also have their own Nollywood movies, just like the Yorubas that speak Igbo from beginning to the end. Those movies exist and they're thriving. So in that process, then me and her started sort of going, like talking about, like, I was like, wow, I didn't know that this existed. So she sent some resources to me. Apparently there's AFMAG Igbo. How did we miss this?
There is
AFMAG Igbo. But I think that true to what we were saying, there's a lot of truth to what we're saying. Because AFMAG Igbo was founded in 2015. AFMAG Yoruba and Hausa were founded in 2003.
Yep.
So 12 years after. I also think that was like great insight. Thank you, Ikeni, for that. You know, get into AFMAG Igbo. Do you think we can get DSTV? I've heard people say it, but the work to do, it just sounds too long.
To get DSTV here?
Mm.
Is that even going to be worth the work? Like, for what?
Just for AFMAG, like AFMAG, Yoruba, Igbo Hausa, just to kind of, to just keep your finger on the pulse. Like, but me, I won't lie, whenever I go on those, like, AFMAG channels, I feel like they just dump a bunch of shit there. Like, it, to me, it's like background. I can see why people will play it in like salons, restaurants, because it's just like background noise. I don't really think that you can really invest in like a lot of the storylines. But my mom loves her AFMAG Yoruba, man. Like she doesn't watch. My mom doesn't watch English speaking Nigerian movies.
I love that.
Yeah.
So that's all we do. Like, you know, she now told me, anyway, this is random, but like, she was like, Tayo, how come we don't hug? Like, she just came to hug me randomly. Like, Tayo, I just realized I was watching something and I realized we never hugged. Came to hug me. I was like, girl.
That is so sweet. Do you know what? It takes a lot of vulnerability and courage, actually, for people to look at something they've done a certain way their whole lives and say, I'm going to do it differently, especially for Nigerian parents. But it really does. And that's really amazing. Most Nigerian parents, their response to that would be, I love her and she knows it. That's where they're going to end. So for her to even say, you know, because it's not like you developed all these issues because you weren't hugged, right? It's something she could have ignored and said, you and your mom are pretty close. And you guys, at least from what I know, you guys seem to have a pretty dope relationship. Like, she could have overlooked that part and said, I beg, that's right. Yeah. But she's like, I'm going to give her a hug. That is so sweet, honestly.
Yeah, no, I love my mom. Like, she's incredible. Like, I think that's why things I see, like, just with, like, Nigerian politicians, for example, it just fucks me up. Like, it's so, like, it's just like, what do you think you're doing?
Like, they're incorrigible. Like, Nigerian parents are incorrigible. That's just what it is. And you know what? Speaking of incorrigible, we have a pair of incorrigible parents on this episode.
I love this segment. Okay,
no, I've never seen any pair of parents more headers, and their last name, they need to change it from Junodu to headers. Fuck the Junodu parents. Let's go.
Okay. Let's go.
Okay, let's go. So today I'm going to be talking about Hell or High Water. It is a short film. You can find it on YouTube. And it was made, or I don't know if it was made by them or published by them, the Tears Initiative Nigeria. So Tears Nigeria. Tears stands for the Initiative for Equal Rights. And they are they're an activist group or advocacy group in Nigeria. And honestly, I think that I mentioned them last week. I was all over the place with how I said it, but this time I came prepared. They are called the Initiative for Equal Rights, you know, and they have a great YouTube channel. They advocate for different rights in Nigeria, including queer rights, gay rights, all of that, LGBTQIA rights. And I decided to do their short film, Hell or High Water. And I remember the first time I saw the trailer, I was so moved. I was like, wow, two Nigerian men in love. And it seemed gentle and soft. And I was like, this is beautiful. Anyway, I watched it and things were a little different when I watched it. And so I'm just going to start by telling you the story. Okay, so in the beginning of the story, you see this guy narrating his life and talking about how his life was difficult and his, you know, the father figure in his life was pretty much useless. And he was praising this Pastor Junodu, Pastor Gbolahan Junodu, for being his mentor. And next thing you see the Pastor Junodu talking to a bunch of men, young men. He's their mentor and he's encouraging them. And Pastor Gbolahan is played by Eyinna Nwigwe. Mm-hmm. The guy from Wedding Party 2, the main mm-hmm. character, the Banky's brother, he's playing this role. And next thing you see him at home, his wife tries to get him to come to bed. I guess she was trying to get some and he was just like focused on what he was watching. And then he's like, I'll meet you in bed. So she goes to bed. She seems a little, you know, deflated by his rejection. And she goes to bed, and then next thing he goes to the bathroom, then he looks at his phone, then he goes to join her, and then they have sex. Move to the next scene. He's like in a car, but he's getting these flashbacks of
Yes. This is not a spoiler, but why did he look at his phone? Like, was that
it's significant, and you see why. Yeah. Okay. So because at first I actually didn't catch that part. I had to watch it again. I was like, oh, okay. Mm-hmm. And in the bathroom, you could tell that he was like, you know, when you're staring at your image, you're like, just kind of, he seemed like he was psyching himself up. That's what I thought, at least. So he's like getting these flashbacks, and this is consistent throughout the story. He keeps getting these flashbacks about like this kid, and which I assume is him, being bitten on the beach by like a Sele, sort of like a white garment priest or something, and like beating him at night by the beach. And you know, you could tell it was an exorcism, and you could, you know, he's having these flashbacks throughout. But that was the first time they showed it. And next thing, there's an elderly pastor that tells him he's going to lead a new branch. The only reason I brought up this scene is because I don't know if you want to talk about it, but it was the way that in the conversation he goes, what of you and your wife? Are you guys working on children? Hurry up, we need children in the army of the Lord. I thought that was very irritating. And I think that's something Nigerians tend to pry a lot and not mind their business and ask questions. Anyway, whatever. I just
I agree with you. I think that's significant to talk about, because for me, it's also like Nigerians prying, but it's also like, this is the root of the transactional parental relationship. You're encouraging somebody to have a kid for the army of the Lord?
Like, anyway, let me not even talk, because you already know I stand with that shit. Anyway, like, leave my kids alone. Yeah, so anyway, so there's that. And Yeah, so then he keeps getting the flashbacks again, and his character just seemed perpetually worried and anxious. He seemed like a good guy. You know, Aina is fucking beautiful, handsome guy, but just perpetually worried. And then you see other interactions with him and church members, people thanking him for the great job. And this is a man that's trying. Anyway, then next thing, he knocks on a door and a man opens it. Taya, I was supposed to check who played this. Let me just quickly find who played this shit. I forgot his name. Hello, hi, what?
No, it's not how I always feel.
You know, and the thing is, I've seen the guy, like, I know the guy's face and I think I know his name, but Daniel, K. Daniel, that's his name, yes. Yeah, so, Balahan. Pastor G, I'm just going to call him Pastor G. Pastor G knocks on the door, and then Daniel K. Daniel's character, who's Casey, opens the door. But he looks like, you know when someone you're not expecting, but you're reluctant to let them in? So he's like, what do you want? He's like, let me come in. So he walks in, and then the way he starts speaking, you can tell that they've had some sort of like friendship or something in the back, in the past, because he's like, oh, you've changed up the place, you've, so you could tell that that's a place that they've spent time together in and everything. Yeah, so as they start talking, he mentions, Pastor G mentions the whole thing about, like, he mentioned something about his wife releasing tapes of something, of their intimate moments and something like that. He's like, yeah. And then Daniel's character is like, oh, but, like, he seems resentful of him. He's like, but you left me, you know, you promised me this and this, that, that. And Pastor G is like, well, but I'm happy. What do you expect me to do? Like, so there was, like, this back and forth, but he's like, my heart has always been with you. So he holds him. And then, then Daniel is trying to, like, remove his hand, and Casey, like, pulls him. No, Pastor G, yeah? Pastor G pulls him in. But me, I won't lie, I was expecting a smooch, but we didn't get that. Yes, we got it. We got no. We got it in a touching forehead kiss, like the forehead to forehead thing, which can be really sweet and intimate. Okay. And it was, yeah, and that's where and I think it's such a beautiful scene, because that's where the movie poster comes from as well. So they're in that thing for a while, and he seems like he's crying. And anyway, the camera pans to a different scene, and then you can see the wife, Ashoye, Pastor G's wife, is calling a psychologist, saying, I'm calling because, doctor, I did everything a wife should do to a husband, but I don't think he sees me as, like, a sexual, like, he doesn't see me like someone he's sexually attracted to until he wants to. And I don't know, which is another thing I want to emphasize on. A lot of the time, I don't know why Nigerians have to use husband and wife lingo around sex. Nigerians have sex in all circumstances.
Yeah.
So I don't understand this husband and wife lingo when it comes to sex. It has always bothered me. Even when I was prudish as fuck and I was super Christian, it just annoys me when Nigerians want to talk about sex and they'll say, when a husband and a wife lay together in bed, I'm like, can you guys stop acting like this is the only circumstance under which sex happens? Like, anyway, that's just by the by. But so she says, I did everything a husband should do to a wife, and he still, anyway, she's like complaining. And as I said, this is played by Ashoye Raka. And that was, she was complaining to her doctor. And then they pan back to Pastor G and Casey, and they had just finished a lovely round in bed. And they were, Taya is a mess. That scream. They had just finished their round and they were in bed and they were talking about, like, oh, it was like wishful thinking. They were like, man, I wish this could be our lives. Like, maybe we move to Cambodia. And this is me pausing the movie and Googling, can gay couples live in Cambodia? Like, I'm like, I'm already trying to figure out. So, so they're like, because, you know, maybe we can go to a safe place and just start over again. Pastor G mentions Casey's ex-wife, Hawa, planting cameras to spy on their privacy, like their intimate moment. And as he's saying that, there's a sudden knock on the door. And Casey goes to the door. And he peeks through the hole. He sees who it is. And he opens. And then his ex-wife storms in with, like, their 10-year-old son. And then she's like, he's like, why are you here? I thought you said it was until the weekend. She was like, eh, but when my son keeps crying that he wants to see his daddy, he wants to see his daddy. And then, you know, the wife just like, ex-wife just storms in, and then she starts walking around, looking around the apartment. And he's like, what are you doing? And then she sees a Bible and she's like, oh, so you read the Bible now? Yeah. She's like, so you read the Bible now? And he was like, that's none of your business. So I think he just kept quiet. I don't remember, but he didn't really. And then she now says, anyway, I just have to be sure that this space is safe because you'll be sleeping with all these small, small boys around town. Da, 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 da. Yeah. And the son was just standing there. And this is like not like a 2-year-old or 1-year-old. Like this is like a 10-year-old that can hear everything. So she's like, she's like, let me even go into the room and check. And as she goes into the room and she searches around, Pastor J had hidden, so she didn't see him. And as she's walking out, she just pauses at the door. I was like, bitch, if you don't go back to that living room. Anyway, she opens the closet and sees Pastor G in there. I know. Which I just realized is pretty symbolic. He was in the closet.
That comment about you basically all these small, small boys around town too is not by coincidence. Because of course, like, people have tried to draw a straight line from homosexuality to pedophilia to make it more seem more egregious or seem more objectionable or seem more immoral than it is. And I think just even that statement, it seems like a very like flippant, like, oh, hey, you see all these small, small boys. Well, no, like there's a very, that idea of a man and a small boy.
I agree.
It's very image, I guess, projected onto like homosexuality to just make it seem like this is something vile.
I totally agree with that. And I also think I had that thought for sure. And I also had the other thought that it might also just be the Nigerian way of, because now they're like an older couple, maybe in like their late 30s. Maybe who he's sleeping with might even be like 25, which who is an adult. But you know how Nigerians, like even a Nigerian mom will look at her, a Nigerian wife will look at her husband and say, oh, look, are you sleeping with small, small girls? The small girl might be 30. She's just like, so I think that's, I thought that it was like, to me, it was a double-edged sword. It's like, she might just be saying it. But to be fair, after, when I finish all the things she said, then it definitely leans more to what your analysis. It leans towards that because she was sinister as hell. First of all, remember, she's the one that went to plant cameras in the house, released tapes. Yeah. Anyway, release tape, sent it, put it on. Like, revenge porn.
That was what they're saying. So when he said, because like, you kind of talked about it before, but he said that she had put cameras and released, like...
She sent it to Pastor G's parents. She had sent it to Pastor G's parents. Yeah. So, and I think she also sent it to Casey's parents. So she did it to the parents and then she got a divorce. Then after that, she comes back and she's like, she comes back and she just starts being so mean to him. She's like, oh, when she sees Pastor G, she's like, hey, who is this? Pastor Bola Mojinotu. Like, it was very, like, it just sounded mean. Then she went back to him. She's like, you see, you're still doing this thing and it hurt me. Even eight years ago when I caught you, it still hurts like it was yesterday. Which was another thing I was like, oh my God. Like, really?
Like, why?
I'm not going to lie. I was torn between, like, is this misogyny, like trying to paint? You know, sometimes they like to paint women as, oh, that thing the man did to her 20 years ago is still painting her. And I just don't agree.
But do you think that the movie was legitimizing that feeling? Or do you think that the movie was saying, this is the kind of woman that will come and
steal? So that's where I'm going with this. It could, yeah. So at first, on a normal day, I'd have thought, hey, typical Nigerian BS. Maybe because it's tears, I was like, we might just be painting it as like, she's very manipulative and you see where I'm going with it. Mm-hmm. And again, at the end of the day, any negative, any guess you want to have about this woman, when you look at the full range of what she showed us, just pick the worst one. Mm-hmm. So then she now said, you know what? I'm taking my son back home. And he was like, why? But the boy wanted to be there. She's like, no, please, I don't want to corrupt him. She calls him cocksucker. Yep. Then she now called him an effing F on the way out.
Oh my God.
Yeah. And then she said, I'm going to make sure you get zero custody of this boy. Which was like, what the hell? Like, okay. So this is what I'm saying at this point. Any negative thing you want to think about her, you can probably just say yes. So then Pastor G comes out after she leaves. He's like, oh my God, I'm ruined. I'm ruined. I had a perfect life. And Casey's like, are you okay? You think I'm not the one that's ruined my child? Yeah. And you know, said, I thought you guys were divorced. Why did you let her come here? And he's like, ah, we have a child together. Don't you understand that? Mm-hmm. Do you know that was when I started seeing Pastor G a little bit? I was like, wow, you're really selfish. You're really selfish. But anyways, I thought it was really selfish when that happened. I was like, you need to chill. This is also about him. And like, his son just heard all these things about him. Like, it was a lot. But then again, two of them, that's why it's called hell or high water, is one or the other. There's really no, like, I don't know, no one is really worse off or better. Like, at the end of the day, everyone is in deep shit, period. Yeah, so he now says, he said, I'm happy. He now said, I should never have come here in the first place. Which really, that one hurt my feelings. I was hurt. And then he goes, and then Casey, that was my favorite line of this movie. He goes, if you're happy, then why did you come here?
Yes.
That was powerful. And yeah, so then Pastor G storms out and says, it was a huge mistake for me to come here. I was like, yeah. Anyway, I mean, of course, I also understood like what he was going through. Like, he's really hiding. Like, he has built this other life that is a pastor. He has a beautiful wife. Yes. So he had So anyway, he gets home and his wife is like, Bala, now I know why you don't do that. She says it straight up. She says, you are a homosexual. And he freezes. Like, he didn't, like, the way this guy froze, like, you could feel the fear. Like, his world stopped. He's like, you are a homosexual. And again, another line they put in the movie I didn't like. She was like, even with all of this, and she's like touching her body, with all of this, you wouldn't even sleep with me. I'm like, that. Like, you know what? Honestly, let me not get too critical. I think they're just painting what the average person thinks like that. So the wife, she said, anyway, I've seen all your videos online, because apparently now the videos have been posted online. And so she left. And the next scene is about the incorrigible head-ass parents. So you see him sitting with his mom and dad. And if you had seen like Pastor G this whole movie, he was always fresh, fine, handsome, killer haircuts with that, you know, when they put that pattern in, like, really nice. But this time he looked very rough, disgruntled. He looked hopeless. You could just see his wife's picture at the back. His dad was like, this sinful lust, this one that you have chosen to be gay. And then the wife was like, now that they've excommunicated you from the church, and me, they've removed me from women's leader. Like, it was just so bad. The dad called him a curse. Like, it was so bad. The mother said, I wish I had aborted you. Then the father goes, I've disowned you. Let me just leave before you pass this curse on me. And the dad storms off. And then the mom was like, see, me, this marriage, I know, I mean, is loveless. Maybe if I had married the love of my life would not be the way it is today. But I did the right thing. Bolamo, do the right thing. Eh? Do the right thing. And she too leaves. And the next thing you see him on the phone, and as he's trying to make a call, a bunch of like press people just bombard him and like, Pastor Bolamo, now that we've seen your video, are you a... And that was how the movie ended.
Eh?
Yes.
Oh no, Nyala, go back. Go back and get the rest of the movie.
Should I add a new story?
Yeah. Yes, no, you must complete the end of the movie.
Oh yeah, he went to burn the church. What do you want me to say?
No.
I mean, you want me to say that him and next thing they showed him and Casey. Well, that would be my alternate ending. Him and Casey in Cambodia.
No, because I need that alternate ending for
San Francisco. Okay, him and Casey went to San Francisco. They were in San Francisco on that trolley. They were hanging out in the trolley.
I can't.
What? Yeah, so that was what happened. And I obviously, that was like the perfect ending to what you would call hell or high water. It's either he lives in a closet and lives in hell, or he lives outside a closet and still lives in hell. So what's kilo, kilagbe, kilaju? Where is he? Like, where is he going? Like, and that is, like, I remember when the first time I saw it, I was like, yo, this is bad. Like, there's nowhere to go, nowhere to run. You know, like, there's the only way out of this is for people to be able to live their lives freely. Like, this is an engineered and manufactured prison by obviously patriarchy and society and religion and all of that. It's not legitimate at all.
Yeah.
So the themes that there were a few observations I made in this. From this movie, first of all, again, tears. I feel like this is the first time I have seen a Nollywood movie that shows queerness from the perspective of queer people, because usually you're getting it from the perspective of like the general population and how they feel about queerness. That's why they always end up killing them or making them commit suicide or whatever. I think that for the first time, we're really entering the life of like a queer person and we're seeing them like, oh, this is what they're going through. And it's like finally from their perspective. So I think it's really powerful that they're able to give us their own perspective and like show us their perspective. Yeah. And obviously this perspective is bringing to us like, you can imagine the identity crisis, existential crisis, spiritually, he's feeling not good enough, morally, even socially. Then obviously you can imagine the impact on the mental health of anybody going through that. Then obviously the role of religion, so those flashbacks, I believe that they were exorcisms, like there were exorcisms that he had to go through.
Like, yeah, gay conversion therapy is just extremely messed up and evil and horrible. I did a story on somebody who had gone through gay conversion therapy who, like, they live in the States. Mm-hmm. But they came from, like, a Christian, evangelical Christian background, like, the kind of household where everything was just about God and church. But when they were a child, like, they always knew they wanted to be a minister. They went through all this, like growing up in an evangelical Christian household, but knowing who they were on the inside and knowing that that didn't match with what they were being forced to present on the outside and all of these things. And it was to the point where, and also that's why even this movie too, like it becomes an additional layer of mind fuck when you're part of a religious institution and having to go through this, because just the gaslighting, the constant, like even having to possibly preach things that you know aren't true or that you know don't align with who you are or your own personal value. So that world of, like, I really empathize with the guy in this movie, the Pastor G. Imagine, like, he used to say, oh, why would he be so mean and so callous to this guy? But think about what the stakes are in this situation for him. And that's not to say it's worse for him or anything like that. No, like, they're both going through something. Think about the size of the stakes for somebody who is a part of an institution that has for so long rejected people like him and his institution. Like, it's just such a crazy weird thing. So anyway, this person who I did the story on, they actually are still a Christian. Even after they left home, they were still a Christian and still believed in God, but just knew, so they were struggling with so much depression and falling into, like, obviously terrible coping habits, alcoholism, because they were struggling with their Christian faith and going to bed every night like they were an abomination, but at the same time knowing, like, okay, but this is crazy, like, this isn't who I am. And so eventually at some point they ended up going back home to their hometown and asking to go and see, like, just asking to be exercised, basically. And that they went through, like, this really horrible, like, I can't even describe to you the encounter. But that's what I wanted to point out too, is that one thing they said to me, like, just in the course of the experience, like, gay conversion therapy, very often that therapy is starting in the household. It doesn't start with...
Oh, yeah, true. I never thought about that. Yeah.
It starts from home with your parents telling you, oh, this isn't who you're supposed to be. Or your parents kind of hyper-emphasizing the certain parts of your spiritual practice that will remind you that these things are wrong, or certain things are right, and or certain types of people are acceptable and other people aren't. So not just that thing of, oh, maybe they were flogging somebody on the beach or whatever, like that's part of it, but in a lot of ways that process, that system of programming starts way before that.
It does.
And it's long, it's like a prolonged, imagine just being gaslighted or gaslit for years or for whole life. Like, it's just one long mind fuck. It's so horrible.
Yeah, it's absolutely terrible. And, you know, then the other thing that was brought up in this movie was outing people. If you out somebody in Nigeria, it is a death sentence. That's it. Like, and I just want you to know that if you do that, you're complicit in murder. Like, that's what you're complicit in. You're complicit in, even if that person doesn't physically die, because this Pastor G guy, they didn't physically kill him, but he, during the sit down with his incorrigible parents, they said that, it's true, I'm going to keep going off on those people. He said he couldn't get any jobs. He had been excommunicated from church, and church was the only community he had. So you lose your friends. You die a social death. You die a, like, that is a lot. Meanwhile, this is the thing I don't understand about Nigerians too. Like, the negative energy, the hateful energy that Nigerians give homosexuality, queerness, is so misplaced. And I just wish they'll put it towards real crime and like real offenses. We don't have that same energy. And sometimes it scares me, like, what kind of society does not value, what kind of society hates consensual adult sex, but loves non-consensual sex, even with, like, down to even with kids? Like, what is, like, what's, this is so messed up. It's like we're upside down. Anyway, then another thing that I'm understanding, even just as a woman, as a Black woman that lives in a primarily white environment, a white supremacist country, and I've done that for like half of my life, when I look at oppressed people, you know, whether it's people that are oppressed for their sexuality or their gender or their, you know, or their color or race or whatever, I find that these people reveal the farce behind these like powerful institutions that are being upheld. So, for example, marriage is a very, very powerful institution in Nigeria. Look at the mom finally admitting to the son that, well, even me, I'm in a loveless marriage, but in fact, when she was leaving, she said, let me go before your dad would chase me out of the house. So even you taking time to spend a little more time with your son is enough to get you kicked out of the house. But here you are trying to uphold that marriage. So what is in it for? Why should anyone aspire to that? There's so many things that even religion, culture, marriage, all these things that society holds in such high regard. The truth is the people that are really going to change it for the better are the oppressed people. You know, the day that our voices are truly valued in those institutions, that's when all the veils come off. Because if we're going to completely question marriage in Nigeria and say, if this is something we just do because quote unquote is the right thing, then maybe we should delegitimize it. Like, why are we holding on to something when we're just doing it for doing sake? Do you understand? Like, so, and it's so crazy that like this stone that's been dejected, this Pastor, Pastor G, this guy's life that you people are seeing as like something you can destroy because you don't like a part of who he is, he's holding up a mirror to you, and you're having to see that a lot of what you're doing is just ojuaye. It is, you're doing it for doing sake, and it's meaningless, and your life is meaningless. Like, your heterosexual, religious, conforming life is actually meaningless. I'm sorry, like, and I don't mean to be like to say it doesn't matter, but that the way you framed your life is completely meaningless. That frame within which you've put your life is completely meaningless. And that's why you're so upset that this person is holding a mirror up to you. Because when, even with like, if you look at gender roles, people will always ask me, even they'll say, so who is the husband? Who is the wife? What does that mean? What does that even mean? What does that mean? There are relationships that do great with two wives or two husbands. So what does that mean? Because again, you're so stuck on heteronormativity, gender roles, that you think one person must sit at home, the other one must go and work. Okay. Like, yeah, so those systems, I think that, for example, queer people challenge it. So people are so afraid because they're, does that mean that I cannot tell my wife that she can't work? So everything just, it sends everyone, they're in distress. Everyone is in distress.
I was just going to say, like, what you just said is what I was going to say, which is, like, a lot of things, and I'm also beginning to realize this and the way this plays out in other different spaces, but there's something deeply fearful. Like, when people say, oh, when you have, like, you're homophobic or you're racist because you fear what you don't understand, I'm beginning to understand that it's not a fear in the sense of you're scared that homosexuality is going to do something to you. Or it's not, so it's not that kind of immediate fear. It's more the fear of the threat to the social hierarchies that you have embedded yourself in and that work for you, and that you don't want to have to shift in any kind of way. Because this word fear, like, I'll be honest, I've had a lot of trouble with when it comes to conversations around bigotry, because I don't understand what you mean by you're scared of something because you don't understand it. That's what, because for me, my understanding of fear is like, okay, it's like a preemptive response to an immediate threat. Like, you're scared of something that you think is about to happen to you right now. But is that this fear, like, in a lot of different, and there's also that aspect of it too, like, that just is also just a literal, like, genuine immediate fear, like, when it comes to, like, race, like, just the way that Black people have been projected to the world or whatever. But when I think about that word fear, it's not that you're scared that someone is going to make you gay. What you're scared of is not the thing. What you're scared of, that thing does to the social hierarchies and the construct that you have made yourself comfortable with.
Yeah. Oh, well, this was a fun episode. Okay. Yeah. Yeah, send your positive queer stories. Let's spread some hope this month, and, you know, just show somebody else the way it's been done. Let's amplify that energy so that it can multiply. Yeah.
I look forward to the day when that will be the overriding energy. Yeah. Like, positive. Yeah.
Agreed. Well, okay. That's great. And don't forget to email us, tbcpodcast20@gmail.com, or you can find us on Twitter, To Be Continued P, or on Instagram, To Be Continued Pod.
Thank you, and
to God be the glory.